Well, you know, if you're going to be a model, you need to have perfect teeth.
That's probably not true. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, did you hear about this one? We are going to talk about some news stories, all of them recent, all of them awesome.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Beep, beep.
And Tim Wick.
Zip bang.
Did you hear about this one?
Oh, yeah?
Which one are we talking about?
This one? We got some articles for you today.
Oh.
Yeah, we got some articles. I'm just going to, right off the bat, say, turns out weekly content starts to get hard after 12 years. Starts to get a little tricky. So today we got some articles.
What are you talking about, Molly?
Yeah, just today. Also, they got these God chatbots. Yeah.
Say what? Chatbots.
God chatbots offer spiritual insights on demand. But what could go wrong? So this is actually from today, the day that we're recording this.
Okay.
Large language models trained on religious texts claim to offer spiritual insights on demand.
Oh, boy.
Just before midnight on the first day of Ramadan of 2023, a 20-year-old Muslim student living in Kolkata made Quran GPT, an artificial intelligence-powered chatbot he had designed to answer questions and provide advice based on Islam's holiest text. It crashed 7 hours later for an overflow of traffic. He had threats from people and other stuff. He decided to leave it up because he thinks that there are people who want to get close to their religion but are not willing to spend the time to get to know more about it. So how could I make that easier for people? And this is not, and Quran GPT is not the only one. There's also Bible.ai, Gita GPT, Buddhabot, Apostle Paul AI, a chatbot trained to imitate 16th century German theologian Martin Luther, another one trained on the works of Confucius, and yet another that is designed to imitate, I shit you not, the Delphic Oracle.
Oh, wow. Actually, that's the most interesting of them all.
I would like to say, if you are not absolutely out of your fucking mind on hemlock fumes, then you do not get to communicate with the Delphic Oracle.
I mean, maybe, but it's a bot. So does it know?
Some of those, I'm not going to say make sense. Some of those I could understand happening. Because there's enough written about them and in those texts to maybe like build an AI and train it to speak on those subjects, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like one of the oracles, like how much could possibly be written that isn't fiction? About what they had to say and how they had to say it.
When I go to there, it says Delphi is a research prototype designed to investigate the promises and, more importantly, the limitations of modeling people's moral judgments on a variety of everyday situations.
Well, that sounds more boring than when you said it the first time.
Absolutely seems super boring. But these other God bots, so a lot of these, they are large language models. They use natural language processing, and they think the bots will theoretically synthesize spiritual insights in a matter of seconds, saving users time and energy.
That'd be great. Then you're gonna have preachers like have the bots write their sermons.
So a bunch of the the chair of theology at Villanova University is like disparagingly saying these are shortcuts to God and they undermine the spiritual benefits that are usually achieved through lots of reading. Biblical translation used to be painstakingly slow, but now, boom, translated.
I think that might be the funniest thing about this is that there are people that are like, back in my day, we had to find God the hard way through reading. And kids these days are trying to do a shortcut to Christ. Like,
I had to walk uphill to the Bible both ways.
Right. Yeah. Like if they were honest about, you know, this being about salvation and saving people's souls and about, you know, helping people find the right path, wouldn't why would you give a fuck if someone had a shortcut to that, you know, to paradise and to living a good life and being a good Christian? It's so fucking fucked up.
It's the same reason that all priests used to, like, they used to do everything in Latin.
Sure.
And it used to be that you had to read, and it used to be, you know, like, there used to always be these barriers traditionally.
Yeah, yeah. There was gatekeeping your way to God. I'm intrigued by the idea of Buddhabot. I mean, if you ask Buddhabot a question, wouldn't it, like, contemplate it for several days before giving you an answer?
No, it's right away. So there was a paper uploaded earlier this year where they talked about the use of sentiment analysis. So sentiment analysis is a natural language processing enabled process for detecting emotional valence in text. And they use that to analyze Jesus's Sermon on the Mount. You know, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth, that whole bit. After analyzing 5 different translations of this sermon, researchers, quote, found that the vocabulary of the respective translations is significantly different, and they detected different levels of humor, optimism, and empathy.
Huh.
People are saying, though, that in a certain sense, there is nothing that's been new in theology for like 800 years. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of exciting that there might be something this dramatic and new. But he says that there's going to be a temptation. People are like, there's a temptation to make money. You know, people are going to be, and any chatbot is going to carry a lot of the defects that all large language models have, the biggest mm-hmm. of which is hallucinations. They're going to make stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
And then people are going to think that's in the Quran or that's in the New Testament. And it's not, because the fucking computer made it up.
I think it would be absolutely hilarious if televangelists start ranting against AI because they're concerned that the AI will replace them, because, like, those guys also spout total fucking nonsense and make shit up about the Bible.
Yeah.
And they rake in the cash. Imagine if there was an AI chatbot that was ruthlessly efficient about doing what they do, but on a you know, incredibly fast, automated, personalized basis. They are ripe to be put out of work by AI.
Wouldn't it be great if like they like railed against it while showing that AI picture of Donald Trump praying with 6 fingers?
Well, now, so here's a big problem. Because of the hallucination that, you know, the chatbots have to do, a lot of people that are asking questions tend to ask questions that might be more sensitive, ones you might be too embarrassed or ashamed to ask your priest, imam, or rabbi, and therefore they are getting rough responses. So the guy that made Quran GPT said he had a glimpse into some user prompts, which usually they're invisible to him. But when he did a software update, he was able to see some of them. One of them was, I caught my wife cheating on me. How should I respond? Another was, can I beat my wife? Asking Quran GPT, can I beat my wife? Like,
do we know what Quran GPT said?
No, but it says there are documented cases of Gita GPT condoning murder while citing passages from the Bhagavad Gita. Killing someone, it said, was okay as long as it's done for the sake of protecting one's dharma. And so basically they're saying, you know, be careful whenever, I mean, this should go for anybody using a chatbot. Don't listen to the robot. It's not always right.
This should go for anybody using a Bible.
Yeah, right?
Something else would be hilarious is if they made like they end up making like a Jesus chatbot that, you know, the best to their ability of all the recorded information they have, they program it to you know, answer as Christ would.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just too fucking woke for everyone. Like that's like people are like asking Jesus what to do. And he's like, burn down the banks.
Yeah.
Like, you need to start by killing some billionaires.
Jesus said gay rights. And that made me mad.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, that is my, that's my little bit. That's my little
fascinating.
Story.
That's fascinating.
Story for the week.
Hey guys.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You hear about this little this local
thing. Like, here we are in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's going on around here?
So here in Minneapolis last week, the city council passed an ordinance that requires rideshare drivers, like Lyft and Uber drivers, passenger drivers. To pay their people a more respectful wage.
This is the thing they passed a while ago, but they just overrode the veto, right?
So
I believe they had to pay them minimum wage, right?
Sort of. So they, yeah, they had passed it before.
Yep.
There are big boy,
so strong
mayor, Mayor Jacob Fry, vetoed it, and they went back with a veto proof majority to pass it. This was rideshare drivers lobbied and met with them and really mm-hmm. pressured to. They had a lot of input on crafting this, mm-hmm. and so now Lyft has said they're pulling out of Minneapolis, just the Minneapolis, not the rest, not the world around us. And Uber is saying they're pulling out of Minnesota.
They sent a bunch of my friends were like. Had not been following the news, and all they got was an email from Lyft saying, "Hey there, so sorry to say that we are not going to be operating anymore as of, you know, your city has made it impossible." And like, really, really like blaming the not saying anything about why, just like your city is making it so that we can't operate.
Sure,
like,
because if they said, well, your city is making us pay drivers a living wage.
Not even. That, I mean.
But, well, I mean, let's say you're, city is making us force drivers pay drivers something closer to a living wage, then they'd be like, but that makes it impossible to operate under our business model. And I'd be like, well, then you have a shitty business model.
Right. Yeah. That's a business problem. So what the pay increase was, $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute for time spent transporting a rider, or $5 per ride, whichever is greater. Tips are excluded.
Mm-hmm.
And so that works out to being like $15.57 an hour.
Okay.
Based on like average trip times, distances, and stuff like that, right?
And that's assuming you're working that full and hour that, because you usually aren't.
Right. No, exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. And so, they both said, you know, business money.
So they don't want to. They don't want to raise their rates. They just want to leave.
Well, it's. I mean, Tim, they already do flex pricing based on demand.
They raise their rates all the fucking time.
They already have the ability to flex their rates and add, you know, lower them based on their whims and, you know, availability of drivers.
But they don't want to do that. Is it just too hard for them to reprogram the algorithm?
They think if they pull out, enough people will complain to their council members that they will be forced to revoke the decision.
Yeah.
Instead of
the Supreme Court will step in, the Minnesota State Supreme Court or whatever.
Or they hope that Minnesota pulls a Texas. And so Austin passed a law that, what did it do? It made Lyft and Uber fingerprint background check drivers, which was effectively them saying you have to do what cabs do, and it's going to cost you as much to do it. Cabs do here.
You can't just let random rapists and murderers who've been convicted drive your car.
And so Uber and Lyft pulled out of Austin. A competing service came in and was doing great, and people were happy with them. And then the pandemic hit, and so they closed. And then Texas passed a law that superseded Austin's law, effectively making it not present. And so then Lyft and Uber came back to Austin. But if you look at, like, Seattle passed a law that was like an $18 minimum wage for rideshare drivers, mm-hmm. New York too, and Lyft and Uber are still there.
Yeah.
Why would they pull out of New York or Seattle?
You know, so like there are plenty of precedents for another company coming in and replacing them that's willing to, you know, fucking pay people somewhat of a fair wage.
Yep.
Or there's examples of Lyft and Uber just fucking dealing with it to get their money. But here in Minneapolis, they're saying, nah. For the law is, if there's a pickup or a drop-off in Minneapolis,
yes,
you have to pay that rate for the time and distance traveled in the city. So if someone is driving to the airport, that's not in Minneapolis.
Right.
That's probably
Most of it is outside of Minneapolis.
Yeah, right. So it's people going downtown to party.
But if you're a driver, you drive down the I-35 corridor to stay in Minneapolis.
But if you're not picking up or dropping off in Minneapolis, if you're going from north of Minneapolis to south of Minneapolis, you'd be fine. You wouldn't be dinged for that. So,
yeah, if you were going from, you know, Richfield to Roseville, that's fine. But you can't go from our house in South Minneapolis, like not even a mile from Richfield, really, right. if you get, and then to say, Target, you know, the Minneapolis, the quarry that's just a hop skip from New Brighton. Like, it's, I will say there is a ride share called Empower that's coming to Minnesota that is from their own website. They say drivers set their own rates and get 100% of the fare. They decentralize rideshare. Drivers earn more, riders pay less, and you can request things like your favorite driver or a driver of your same gender, or they will allow dogs, or they, you know, and so it's, there's all kinds of stuff, and it's,
that sounds way better.
There are also,
how do they make money? Do they have like surcharge or something?
I don't know. Because it says they receive zero of the fare. So,
but there might be a surcharge on the fare. That's
I'm
how guessing. They,
or I'm betting the drivers pay a subscription their service. Drivers buy the service.
Driver app, you can have a 30-day free trial as a driver.
Yep, that's
it. So I'm guessing it's a paid service once you start. Yeah. But you get to set your own rates.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like that's the thing.
That's great.
And it's apparently like it is, not only is it the ability to, that's where decentralization makes sense, right?
Sure. There's the people in the Twin Cities and Minneapolis subreddits have been absolutely fucking unhinged about this.
Oh yeah.
I cannot fucking believe what people are saying in opposition to this. It's so fucking nonsense. But there are a lot of people that are like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, these right-wing assholes who post on the right-wing subreddits are really concerned about disability rights.
They bring that up, and they bring up how it's unfair to people of color, which I don't quite get.
Less likely to own a car, more likely to require.
Sure.
You know what's unfair to people of color? All the East African immigrants who are drivers for Uber and Lyft are getting fucked over.
And they're talking about how all these people are going to lose their jobs. And I'm like, yeah, that's because Uber and Lyft are being fucking assholes.
Right. Well, they're not going to lose their jobs. They're going to lose a gig opportunity. That's the thing. Is like no one's employed by them.
They don't make enough to do that on its own.
The same assholes will be like, you'll be like, hey, these people deserve to get paid for a job. And they'll say, well, it's not a job. They're not employees. They're independent contractors. And then when you turn around and say what you said right then, Molly,
out of a job.
Now you're out of a job. Yeah. Now you don't have a job. Yeah. Fuck off.
Make it easier for people to become taxi drivers. You know, I don't know.
I guess maybe fuck Uber and Lyft.
That's it. I mean, made a profit for the first time last year. That was the first time they've been a profitable company.
Well, they got Amazon beat, don't they?
But the thing is that like they're a disruptor company. So what they do is they come in, they undercut cabs, they put cabs out of business, and then they jack their prices up, and then they make their profit because they've put everyone else out of business.
I think it's interesting that people are, you know, concern trolling for disabled folks with this, because everyone who I know that is disabled to the point where they need mobility devices does not like to use Uber or Lyft, because you never know what car you're getting. You either have to pay for Uber Black to get a certain level of car, or you have to pay more for a car that seats six so that you have enough space to make sure that you have space for your chair or for your, you know, your crutches, your sticks. There's not going to be somebody who's able to help you. Uber drivers are not going to get out and help you into the car. Like, and then on top of that, there's the risk of having no fucking idea who's taking you somewhere.
Oh, sure.
And everything else. So like the disabled people I know who need mobility devices to get around don't know that many. I know like three or four, but they've all been saying that they use cabs. They still call like 24/7 and other cab companies, or they're using the medical ride services.
Well, we have Metro Mobility, which is
it's spotty,
but it we have it.
It's spotty. You have to reserve it well in advance. They're not always.
But either way, Uber and Lyft are not like that's the, when people are like, oh, what about the disabled people, guys? It's like, okay, well, I mean, because you never know what you're getting, even. With even when we're traveling together, when I had my knee brace, we got a car that I was like, Nick is too tall to fit in this. I couldn't fit because I couldn't bend one of my legs. And we were just like, and then we got charged because we had to cancel the ride when the car showed up. We didn't get to pick the car.
Right.
Yeah.
It's, it will negatively impact people if Uber and Lyft leave Minneapolis. Like that has consequences. But it's the consequences are because Uber and Lyft are leaving Minneapolis, not because someone said you need to pay them a
fair
wage.
They don't have to leave Minneapolis.
Uber and Lyft are abandoning those people.
Yes. Yes. That's who you're mad at.
Anyway.
Except they're not. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And fucking call their bluff. See if they leave.
Absolutely.
I dare you.
Man.
Hey,
Tim.
Molly and Nick.
Yeah, Tim.
Did you hear about this?
What?
Say, what's that?
Speaking of leaving.
What'd you hear about?
Who's going?
There's a museum that's going away, and I don't know.
Oh, not a museum. We love those.
I think museums are great.
They're so good.
There's certainly some issues
educational
in terms of
institutions.
I've never heard of a museum that wasn't a net positive.
Well, there are certainly issues in terms of wealth and things like that. But let's just focus on the positive things about museums.
Sure.
There's a museum that's closing.
Oh, no.
The American Bible Society has announced it's going to be closing down its Faith and Liberty Discovery Center.
Oh, no.
That's right.
Faith and Liberty Discovery Center?
A museum devoted to faith and discovering.
Oh.
Faith. And liberty.
Discovering faith and liberty. Liberty in the Bible.
Yeah.
Liberty in the Bible. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know anything about this particular museum, and it's a shame because we could have visited it for a special episode, and now we can't.
Although
I do say I am a little concerned.
Oh.
Oh, why is that?
Because as I read deeper into this article, what I've discovered is they're ending operations on April 1st.
Or are they?
What's wrong? Did they lose all their money because nobody gives a fuck about the Bible?
The press release cited structural limitations, the impact of the COVID-19 lockdowns, and, quote, other factors impacting sustainability.
Wait a minute. How long have they been open?
3 years.
3 years.
3 years.
3 years.
How did the COVID lockdown cause them to have problems then? If they've only been open since 2021.
I mean, you're right. But I think
people just think they can say COVID and we're all like, oh, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. 2020 was really rough on you. That year that you weren't open really hurt you. They struggled from the onset, receiving only around 54,000 in ticket sales for the tax year of July 1st, 2021 to June 30th, 2022. And 54,000 in ticket sales sounds pretty low because I bet their rent alone might have been close to that per month.
It's a facility they built though. They own the, it's a $60 million building.
Well, they reported total expense of around 11 million.
Oh my God.
So 54,000, I don't know how good our listeners are at math, but that's short.
No.
Short of 11 million.
What? So.
This is the Museum of the Bible?
They look forward to reimagining what the future of content could look like through a publicly accessible, digitized format.
Is it called the Museum of the Bible, or is it a different one?
The American Bible Society's Museum.
So the Museum of the Bible is another Bible museum, apparently.
How many could there be?
Right? That's what I'm saying.
So I feel like this was a grift, maybe, and that like there's someone involved in this entity, the American Bible Society, that like their cousin owns a construction company or something, and they were like, Bobby, I've got $11 million to build a facility for a Bible museum. I'm going to give your company all the work, but I need a 10% finder's fee. And it was they built the building to just launder money in a something they knew was going to fail. Right. Doesn't it feel like that?
Could be. I want to talk about some of the exhibits.
Oh God.
First of all, I just looked it up really quick. Tickets are $10. Maybe they could have priced it a little.
They could have priced it a little higher, but I still don't think that would have made up the gap between 54,000.
I want to hear about them.
And 11 million, but yeah, the spirit of liberty, the promise of liberty, is at the heart of the American experience. In this gallery, meet famous and forgotten biblically inspired individuals who work throughout our nation's history to expand America's religious, political, civil, and economic liberties for all people. We have struggling towards justice. What happens when people's individual rights conflict? Whose rights are prioritized?
Oh.
In this gallery, you will explore the country's complex path towards justice and how Americans have looked to the Bible for guidance.
Oh, yeah. We've had a complex relationship with a complex path toward justice for sure.
Yeah.
I don't know that the Bible helped much with that.
Yeah, because they looked to the Bible for guidance as to justify slavery.
I was going to say, on account of how the Bible didn't say don't do slaves.
Yeah, probably. The reality of hope. In times of difficulty, confusion, danger, or great suffering, Americans have turned to the Bible for spiritual strength.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Well, the beauty of unity.
Oh. The beauty of unity.
This gallery is fun, insightful, and uniting as you see what you and others have collected spill into a beautiful data visualization on the wall around you. Mmm, fun. Liberty's light, more liberty. Journey with William Penn to his new model colony in this one-of-a-kind immersive theater experience.
Wow.
The freedom of faith, that's in there. Faith is very freedom.
Hey, Tim.
So, yeah, that's what they've got there.
These guys,
they don't have there.
The American Bible Society,
yeah.
They're basically like a Bible salesman company that's been around since like the 1800s. They support global translation, production, distribution, literacy, engagement, ministry, and advocacy efforts.
So this entire museum was just to sell Bibles.
And so, kind of, yes. And so outreach. So in 1834, the American Anti-Slavery Society offered them a donation, and it was refused by the ABS. The purpose was to subsidize the distribution of Bibles to American slaves, which was about 1/6 of the population, because abolitionists believed that knowledge of the Bible hastened the end of slavery. Which, I mean, I guess. Yeah, the book that... Yeah, okay.
The book that the Southerners were using to justify slavery to the slaves. They would read them passages from the Bible justifying why they were slaves.
Yeah. So they are a company that an organization, they're probably a nonprofit, fuck it. But all they do is like send Bibles and preserve Bibles and you know, they take money from people to give Bibles out to people. It's like the joke in fucking Repo Man when he asks his parents for the money they set aside for him, and they're like, no, we gave it to the good reverend. He's going to use it to send Bibles to El Salvador.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what these fuckers are. They also have a rare scripture collection, so they're also, you know, like looting shit from the rest of the world.
Sure, they have like a Gutenberg Bible or some shit like that.
They have a collection of over 45,000 volume holders, one of the largest collection of Bibles in the world, including a number of interesting and valuable editions of ancient and historic Bibles dating back as far as the Gutenberg.
Ah, as far as the Gutenberg.
So no handwritten pre-Gutenberg Bibles.
None of those monk-created Bibles.
Not the American Bible Society, Tim.
Yeah. So they're closing.
Oh no.
No.
Excuse
me. R&R.
They couldn't make enough money to stay open. Philadelphia, which has a lot of museums.
Oh yeah, sure.
There's a lot of shit going on in Philadelphia. I feel like that people would I might have gone if I were in Philadelphia to just go, what the fuck is this shit? For $10. I mean, I don't feel like I'm really going that far down the rabbit hole for $10. That's not bad.
Kids 6 and under free.
Damn.
Because they really are going to absorb the lessons on biblical liberty.
These are the guys that are responsible for the Good News Bible.
Oh.
The Bibles that are in, whenever they publish them, they're always published in the current vernacular English.
Yeah.
So they're always publishing an updated Bible that's like, you know, translated Shakespeare, right?
I really look forward to reading the name of the Bible that's saying that like Jesus was a real one, cap on God.
David yeeted the stone into Goliath's dome. Like, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, they are the ones that are like, you know what's gonna sell out the kids is let's do one of them slang Bibles.
And Jesus snatched the wigs from the moneylenders and told them their temples were bad.
I mean, I'm super excited to go to their online museum when they open it.
Virtual experience.
A virtual museum is always a good time and never boring.
I've never had that experience because with a virtual museum.
The thing about museums, it isn't about being in the place. That's what people misunderstand about a museum. Yeah. It's not about being in a physical space and interacting with objects. It's just about the looking. So you can look from anywhere.
I know that I've found that when I go and look at a work of art in person, it's exactly the same experience as having looked at a picture of it.
Exactly. I've seen a picture of the Grand Canyon, and it's the same. You and I are the same, Tim.
I look at pictures of the Grand Canyon on my phone, and it's like I'm there.
You know,
it is.
A virtual museum, I think that's one of two things. That's either an encyclopedia or a YouTube video. Like, that's it. That's what a virtual museum is. It's one or the other and nothing in between.
Mom's just sitting on the couch with my eyes closed, and Nick's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm in a virtual museum.
But I'm looking forward to, how faith and freedom connect, and famous and not so famous Americans who use their faith to create freedom.
Oh, yeah.
That's the new memory technique, Molly. You go into your virtual museum. Mind Palace, though. That's so 2000 and late. Everyone now has a virtual museum in their heads.
I mean, honestly, I would have been very excited to go to this museum and see if, like, they had put Thomas Jefferson in the, you know, Americans of Faith part and go,
oh boy.
Dude was not a Christian. He was very clear about it. He was a deist. But he was Christianity, not so much.
See, the Bible is really good at making freedom for people who agree that the Bible is the word of God.
Well, and not even all of them.
Yeah, not even all of them. Very good point. Very good point. Well, you know, hey, we heard about that. We heard about that.
And now so have you.
And now you've heard about that. So, you know, I'll just say, apropos of nothing, if you have any topic ideas for something you'd love to hear us talk about, go ahead and send them to all@geeksthatgod.com. We are always looking for new ideas to talk about with you. We can't just review media all the time. And, you know, we're just trying to make it up and make things nice for you. It's all for you, Damien. It's all for you. Well, we've been Geeks Without God. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can go do that. You should know where to go by now, unless this is your first time listening to the show, in which case, this isn't what it's normally like. You should go listen to some other ones. I have been one of the hosts of Geeks Without God. Tim got in my head with that last episode, and now I don't know how to end it. Thank you. We'll see you next Tuesday. Bye. We found a bunch of science stories, but they were all kind of dumb.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter @GeeksWithoutGod.
Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks Without God.
And I will probably never say it again.